Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
Coronavirus.
Self-isolation.
Extreme measures.
Still, the disease spreads.
As the coronavirus story develops, we're bringing you the very latest.
Many governments have announced new measures to try to contain the virus.
A daily roundup of news, information and health advice.
We are in new territory.
And reports from affected areas.
There's been confusion all day here.
The Coronavirus Global Update from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway. This edition is published in the early hours of Tuesday, the 17th of March. Our main stories: tougher measures are introduced around the world to combat the coronavirus. The US calls for people to avoid gathering in groups.
We've made the decision to further toughen the guidelines and blunt the infection now. We'd much rather be ahead of the curve than behind it.
The French president announces a virtual lockdown after criticising people for ignoring previous restrictions. And the EU says it plans to close its external borders. But the World Health Organization says governments are still not doing enough. Countries around the world have been imposing new restrictions to try to combat the coronavirus, including travel bans and orders to stay at home. More than 7,000 people around the world have died. The head of the World Health Organization says governments need to do more to combat the pandemic.
You cannot fight a fire blindfolded, and we cannot stop this pandemic if we don't know who is infected. We have a simple message for all countries: test, test, test.
However, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus did say he was confident the outbreak could be contained, pointing to strategies in China and South Korea, which appear to be working. Throughout the day on Monday, a succession of world leaders announced new control measures, among them President Trump.
We've made the decision to further toughen the guidelines and blunt the infection now. We'd much rather be ahead of the curve than behind it, and that's what we are. Therefore, my administration is recommending that all Americans, including the young and healthy, work to engage in schooling from home when possible, avoid gathering in groups of more than 10 people, avoid discretionary travel, and avoid eating and drinking at bars, restaurants, and public food courts.
Mr. Trump also said clinical trials of a vaccine had begun. The EU, meanwhile, which was critical of President Trump's travel ban announced last week, has set out plans to close its external border for at least 30 days. The European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, said there would be some exemptions, but the partial shutdown would make the outbreak easier to control.
We propose to introduce a temporary restriction on non-essential travel to the European Union. Why that? Because we think non-essential travel should be reduced right now too, in order to not to spread the virus further.
The plan still has to be agreed by member states. I asked our Europe editor, Katja Adler, about the thinking behind the proposed ban and what it would mean for Europe's internal borders.
That is a very good question. So the thinking behind the plan, it comes from the European Commission here in Brussels. And what the Commission wants to do is to implement a kind of Europe-wide response to the coronavirus. And in this case, when it comes to the travel ban, the idea is to create a sort of fortress Europe to stop additional unnecessary extra cases from coming in from the outside. Now, you could say it's a bit late. It's like shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. But to a certain extent, we're seeing in individual governments across the world an attempt by politicians to take measures also to soothe a very nervous public, and a European Commission that wants to soothe concerns about an EU that is breaking up under the strain of the coronavirus. And what I mean there is those internal borders you mentioned, the fact that one member state, such as France, is shutting down its borders to all intents and purposes to neighbouring country, Italy, or Germany to Austria. And so what the Commission is saying is, look, we'll create a sort of seal on the outside of the EU, and then you guys can lift all of those border restrictions. Now, that is very unlikely to happen. Germany does not want to lift its travel restrictions. Again, scientists really do question as to how effective the travel restrictions are, but it is also a case of assuring the public that you are doing as much as you can to keep them safe. So for political reasons as well, it's very unlikely they're going to want to lift the ban. And so if in the end EU countries agree to this ban, but they don't lift the internal restrictions, then it becomes more of a symbolic than rather than an active issue. For example, EU country Ireland is outside the passport-free Schengen zone. It'll be invited to join the ban, but doesn't have to, even though Irish citizens can travel freely. The UK, it's left the EU, but in a transition period. It'll be invited to join the ban, doesn't have to join it, but UK citizens will still be free to move across the European Union. So how effective it really is a big question. It's more of a political move, an attempt by the Commission to at least give the impression that the EU is acting together against the coronavirus rather than individual countries almost against one another.
And briefly, with all those internal measures in place, can essential supplies get through at the moment?
Well, so all of these travel bans are partial travel bans, if you like, because they are supposed to allow goods to move and for commuters to move. So it's non-essential traffic and travellers that are included in these bans. However, when you do put these partial restrictions on in place, you are slowing down trucks at the border, for example, when it comes to movement of goods. And that is why you have countries such as the Netherlands so keen to lift these internal bans, because it affects the internal market. It affects the EU's single market. It's bad for business. And coronavirus is already so bad for business that they just say, let's get rid of these internal restrictions so that at least that economic pressure can be lifted.
Katja Adler in Brussels. Well, France introduced tough control measures on Saturday night, but President Emmanuel Macron said people had ignored those restrictions and put their own friends and loved ones at risk. He said France was in a state of war against the coronavirus and he needed to introduce further restrictions that he said were unprecedented in peacetime.
Après avoir consulté, écouté,
after consulting and listening to the experts in the field, and in good conscience, I have decided to further strengthen measures to reduce our movements and contacts to what is strictly necessary. As of noon tomorrow, and for at least 15 days, our movements will be greatly reduced. This means that external gatherings, meetings between family or friends, will no longer be permitted. Meeting friends in the park or in the street will no longer be possible.
President Macron in a televised address on Monday night. I heard more from our Paris correspondent, Hugh Schofield.
We will have in France the same kind of measure in place, drastic measure in place, as there is now in Italy and Spain. People will be told to stay at home. They are in a situation exactly as in Rome or in Madrid or in those two countries, where you can only leave your house for what is absolutely necessary. You can go and do your shopping, you can go to the doctor, you can go to work if working from home is impossible for you, and it's clearly expected that in many cases working from home will be possible, and anyone who breaks those rules will be punished, fined, I imagine. And it was very interesting at the beginning of all this, of his announcement, President Macron made a specific reference to the images over the weekend of people in Paris enjoying the sun and living as if nothing had changed. And quite clearly that shocked the government and the medical profession into saying something much more drastic was required as a kind of what they would call here an electroshock to just get through to people finally that this is not some game in which only a handful of people are hurt and just because you don't have the symptoms you can do whatever you want. He was very pointed and very critical of those people who were out there parading in the parks on Saturday and Sunday, saying, you don't realise it's not about you, it's about others. You may not realise you're carrying the virus because you may have absolutely no symptoms at all, but you are, by being outside, raising the risk of propagation. So it's interesting that, the figures are very bad, the numbers are going up here, but also, quite clearly, there's this sense that the message has still not got through. Well, finally, there's, we are in the calamitous and drastic situation that Italy and Spain are in.
Also, of course, some people were voting in elections which the government said could go ahead yesterday, but they have cancelled the second round briefly.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's the recognition that that was a sort of PR absolute disaster. I mean, there were two such different messages going out over the weekend with people being called to come and vote at the same time. Well, yes, I mean, that now, the second round of voting for next week has been scrapped. And well, I mean, that was inevitable. I don't think anyone thought that they were realistically going to go ahead.
Hugh Schofield in France talking to me not long after President Macron's TV address. Well, here in Britain, the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, also announced stricter measures to tackle the coronavirus following criticism that his government hadn't gone far enough. People of all ages across the UK are now being asked to end unnecessary social contact and work from home if possible. The details from Norman Smith.
After initially adopting a much more cautious and gradual response to coronavirus, the government this afternoon unveiled a dramatic escalation in restrictions and precautions. The Prime Minister suggested this significant step change had been prompted by a rapid increase in the spread of the virus, with signs the number of victims could be poised to double every 5 days. Among the measures unveiled, whole households will be urged to self-isolate for 14 days if one member of the family contracts the virus. Everyone will be encouraged to avoid non-essential contact with others, in other words, to avoid going to restaurants, pubs, cinemas and the like. Care homes will also be urged to restrict visitors. Major sporting events and large gatherings will, in effect, be banned. People, particularly in London, will be urged to work from home if possible. And by the weekend, those aged over 70 will be urged to remain at home for up to 12 weeks. At his news conference, the Prime Minister explained why he'd decided on this change of approach.
We are asking people to do something that is difficult and disruptive of their lives. And the right moment, as we've always said, is to do it when it is most effective, when we think it can make the biggest difference to slowing the spread of the disease, reducing the number of victims, reducing the number of fatalities.
The Prime Minister said he hoped the restrictions could come into force voluntarily without the government having to enforce the closure of restaurants and other venues. There are also no proposals at the moment to close schools, although Mr. Johnson said the government was keeping all options under review, including curfews. The chief medical adviser, Chris Whitty, also warned those having to self-isolate with other members of their family that they faced a significant risk of catching the virus, but he said their actions were necessary to protect the rest of the community.
These people, the trouble is, if you actually are in a household with someone who's got coronavirus, there is a reasonably high chance you will be infected and will go on to get this. So this is, in a sense, something people are doing to help protect the rest of society.
Professor Whitty also announced that testing would be scaled up after the World Health Organization earlier today appealed for countries to test, test, test. Today's package of sweeping restrictions brings the British government's response much more into line with that of other countries and suggests that the virus is perhaps spreading much more rapidly than the government's scientists here had anticipated.
Norman Smith reporting. The travel restrictions being imposed around the world are forcing airlines to ground planes and lay off workers. Virgin Atlantic has cut 80% of its flights, and Norwegian Air is laying off more than 7,500 staff until the pandemic passes. I asked our international business correspondent Theo Leggett whether airlines could survive.
That's the question that's being asked at the moment, Ollie. The problem airlines have is that if their planes aren't flying, if they don't have passengers, they don't have any revenue coming in. And they do still have expenses. So some of them lease planes, for example. That costs money. If they don't lay off staff, they have staffing costs to pay. And they can endure that for a certain amount of time. How long depends on how big their cash reserves are. But at some point, if they don't have any money coming in and money is going out, they will run out of it. And that's the conundrum right now, and it's a global thing. Airlines around the world are struggling. The ones which have the biggest resources are the strongest right now, but others are looking vulnerable. And there are severe warnings coming from industry bodies, from individual airlines as well, that if this goes on for long, and remember, nobody knows how long it's going to go on for, then some airlines at least will no longer exist in a few weeks' time.
And we've heard airlines and indeed airports in the US asking for billions of dollars in help. Will that be forthcoming?
It depends on the country. It depends on the airline. What the airlines are saying is, look, we're viable businesses. Under normal circumstances, there is nothing wrong. We can make ends meet. But we need cash. This is a crisis. This is an unforeseen circumstance. And they're saying that, you know, this is unlike anything the aviation industry has ever experienced since it started up. It's worse than the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. It's worse than the 2008 financial crisis. They're saying these are unusual circumstances. What we need is some help to tide us over until things get back to normal. So they're looking at tax breaks, they're looking at potential emergency credit lines. Some will no doubt be asking for big cash bailouts. Whether they'll get that or not is an open question. And the governments have to decide, what are they going to do? Which airlines are they going to support and how are they going to support them? But it is pretty much guaranteed that the industry is changing, and we don't know what it'll look like when it comes out the other side of the crisis.
Theo Leggett. China, of course, is where it all started. But the total number of people who have died there from COVID-19 has now been overtaken by fatalities in the rest of the world. The virus first emerged in the city of Wuhan in Hubei province. Both were placed under lockdown. Doug Perez, an American teacher who chose to stay in Wuhan with his girlfriend, has been under quarantine for more than 50 days. He told Razia Iqbal what it's been like.
We're in the habit of it now. You know, we take the dog for a walk in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening. We always wear our masks. We get all of our groceries delivered. You know, I teach from my computer and I also work on, you know, programming, coding. We're staying busy. We watch Mad Men in the evening and we see the light at the end of the tunnel. Fortunately, things in Wuhan are improving. You know, for the last week, we've had single digit increases in the number of daily new cases. So we see the light at the end of the tunnel.
And when you say that you keep busy and that you, it sounds as though you've got some sort of routine going, and it will surprise some people that actually you are not entirely confined to your house, that you are able to leave.
Well, we're able to walk the dog and there is security and they don't particularly like that, but, you know, we still do it. And where we take every precaution you can imagine. We're not supposed to leave the compound. But the truth is, people still do. You know, people still do hop the fences. I can think of one instance. We needed medicine for something else, totally unrelated to coronavirus. And at the time, you know, delivery services were delayed, and this was, you know, very urgent. So I found it necessary to hop the fence and go to the pharmacy and get medicine.
And when you talk about security, they are ensuring that people are not mingling with one another. So they might overlook the fact that you're walking the dog, but they would stop people from socializing?
People don't socialize. I mean, I think right now people are really taking social distancing to heart. For example, when I take the dog out, you know, sometimes you'll play with another dog, you know, and I know the other owner, but we'll keep about maybe 20 feet apart. At first, it felt a bit awkward, but now it's just natural.
And what about work? Tell us about work.
Some people in Wuhan might be returning to work as early as April. We're hoping that's the case. My job contacted me today and they said that they're planning on having us come back late March or early April.
And the other precautions that you're taking, apart from wearing a mask, are you just, is that the only thing? You're dressing completely normally? You don't have, you know, a protective clothing or anything of that kind?
Always wear an N95 mask. If I were to leave my community for any reason, I would make sure to wear gloves, goggles, and a mask. But right now, when I walk my dog within my community, I just wear my N95. Always, always wash my hands after walking and just keep my distance from everyone.
Doug Perez, an American citizen in Wuhan. Still to come in the podcast.
I have a very large bill coming in from a liquor order I placed last month because I knew after St. Patrick's Day I would be so busy I'd have no problem paying it. Now, the New York State, in their wisdom, has shut down bars and restaurants on their Super Bowl of their business.
The impact of the coronavirus on pubs and restaurants. The United Arab Emirates has sent two plane loads of gloves, surgical masks and other medical supplies to Iran to help combat the coronavirus there. Iran is now one of the world's worst affected countries with more than 14,000 cases. Our chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette, reports.
Iran is reeling from the impact of this virus. It's been calling on countries not to allow politics to impede humanitarian responses to this pandemic. Now one of its regional rivals, the United Arab Emirates, has responded positively. The UAE says it's sent two aircraft with gloves, surgical masks and other protective equipment. Iran desperately needs this aid. But what it wants most of all is for crippling US sanctions to be lifted or for other countries to ignore them, to allow it to access life-saving medicine and equipment.
Lise Doucette. In Africa, four countries, Tanzania, Somalia, Liberia and Benin, have reported their first cases of the virus. Nearly 400 people have so far tested positive in about 30 African nations. Somalia confirmed its first infection was a Somali national who'd been to China. There are concerns that the country could struggle to cope, given the decades of conflict it's been through. Bella Shigao is in the capital, Mogadishu.
For Somalia, it's really going to be very difficult for them to cope. The contingency plan that the government has, you know, for now they are waiting for donors to give them money to buy medical kits and to make hospitals. And even Somalia doesn't have a big quarantine area that can handle a large number of people, if you know that number keeps on rising. Now the government said that they have one person, but we still didn't know if that person infected the other people. In addition to that, Somali people believe that they will not be infected by the disease, as they strongly believe that Africans will never be infected by this disease. We can call it ignorance, will cause the disease to spread. And today we talked with many of the people in the capital, Mogadishu, and what they told us was really very surprising. They said, we don't care about the disease and nothing will happen to us. So the people are really very careless and they don't care about the disease. This means there is a high probability of the disease spreading in the country. People in Somalia doesn't have anything to lose. They already lost a lot of people, and some of them don't even have the basic rights and needs to their life. Some people don't have even nothing to eat. Some people don't have shelter. So most of people in Somalia are careless. Others, like, you know, the middle class community, are somehow concerned about this issue, and they are expecting from the government to come up with a good contingency plan to save the people.
Bella Shigao in Mogadishu in Somalia. A number of governments in Africa have restricted international travel, banned large public gatherings and closed schools. But as our correspondent Andrew Harding reports from South Africa, poverty could complicate efforts to halt the spread of the infection.
In a rough township on the edge of Johannesburg, a single outdoor tap and toilet are shared between a dozen families. No wonder fears of the coronavirus are growing here.
We don't have money to buy the hygiene, that way we'll protect ourselves.
So if the virus comes here, what do you think will happen?
It's gonna kill everyone.
Most people live five or more to a room, no chance to self-isolate.
We are going to struggle because, yeah, it's my neighbour. If I catch it, he's going to catch it. Everyone, they're going to catch it.
Until now, the coronavirus has been slow to penetrate this continent, buying African governments valuable extra time to prepare. But it's here now, and as South Africa's health minister Zweli Mkhize acknowledged today, it's gathering momentum.
We think it's an explosive rise in the cases that are positive, which then becomes our biggest problem, because each and every one is capable of creating their own mini-outbreak.
Like other governments on the continent, South Africa is suddenly opting for the toughest response, closing most borders and all schools for starters. But at a crowded Johannesburg station, commuters squeeze inside tiny minibuses. Self-distancing, simply not an option for many.
If I had any alternative transport, I would.
So you have no choice?
I have no choice.
And so this vast continent braces itself, resolute and acutely vulnerable.
Andrew Harding in South Africa. Today is St. Patrick's Day, which normally sees big celebrations both in Ireland and the US. But the Irish government has called on all pubs and bars to close until at least the 29th of March. In the US, New York is closing its bars and restaurants from Tuesday morning, and other states, California, Ohio, Illinois, and Massachusetts, have also shut down bars and restaurants for the foreseeable future. Chloe Tilley spoke to two pub owners, Kieran O'Leary, who runs a pub restaurant in Killarney in the southwest of Ireland, and Jerry Doyle of Kelly Sports Bar in New York. First, was Kieran surprised by the latest developments?
I think it was very hard to prepare ourselves for it, simply because it was the unknown. But I suppose it was on the cards, right? And it's a very, very difficult time for everyone involved, owners, staff, and the wider community.
So in reality, what does it mean for you, for staff, for a loss of money?
Absolutely. It's a catastrophe, really. It's a complete shutdown. We're going on the government guidelines. I mean, listen, all bills will still come in. We're just going to have to work very closely with the government and see what path we're going to be led on.
What about you, Jerry? Tell us about your situation.
Well, there was very little we could do about it. And I mean, I place orders on what I expect my revenue to be in a month's time. And for example, I have a very large bill coming in from a liquor order I placed last month, because I knew after St. Patrick's Day I would be so busy I'd have no problem paying it. Now, the New York State, in their wisdom, has shut down bars and restaurants on their Super Bowl of their business. So that's where I am. As far as staff goes, unfortunately, everybody gets laid off. Hopefully they'll be able to come back, but the majority of their wages are in tips. So that's that.
Jerry Doyle, manager of Kelly Sports Bar in New York. And we also heard from Kieran O'Leary from Killarney in the Irish Republic. Apart from being kept off school in many countries, children have been among the least affected by the virus. But that hasn't stopped them worrying. So, in order to provide some reassurance, Norway's Prime Minister, Erna Solberg, has hosted a news conference exclusively for children. Selma Ibrahim is a kids' TV presenter in Norway. She hosted the news conference for TV station NRK.
All the children in Norway are wondering what is happening. The school is closed, the kindergarten is closed. Of course, they are a bit scared because this is a different situation. And we want to calm them down and give them the answers.
And how did it go? Did you get lots of questions?
In our show, we asked them to send in questions, and we got thousands of questions. And we picked out the ones we thought was presentable. The children are wondering a lot about when they can come back to school and the kindergarten and what will happen on our national day, the 7th of May. And they're also, one of the questions was how our prime minister, how she worked with her immune system to stay healthy and not sick.
Kjære statsminister, hva gjør du for å styrke ditt eget immunforsvar? Hilsen Amalie på 10 år og Rebecca på 8.
Jeg forsøker å sove nok, for det at å sove er viktig for immunforsvaret.
I try to get enough sleep. Sleeping is important for your immune system. I don't sleep as much as a teenager, but I am quite good at sleeping when I have time off. I also try to get a bit of exercise and fresh air.
So some sensible advice there from the Prime Minister. Were there any surprising questions?
They're wondering if their animals can be sick of the virus and if they can visit their grandparents and who they can play with and what they can do if they forgot to wash their hands. I really understand why they ask all this, because they're wondering and they're scared, as the same as the adults also are scared.
Sounds like a great initiative. What's been the reaction?
Well, all the big newspapers streamed the press conference live, and we have only got positive feedback. I think it's an eye-opener for people about how important children is in this situation. And our job is to just calm the children down and also give them the information they want.
And I guess sometimes they ask things that we assume as adults everyone knows.
Yeah, and I think the adults also appreciate the children's questions. The adults always think about being smart and asking the smart questions, but the children are honest and wants to know everything, and they are not scared of asking.
Selma Ibrahim from the Norwegian TV channel NRK. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this edition or anything in it, email globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.